Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Insightful, fun conversations with some of the best LGBTQ writers from around the world. The Illusions Podcast.
Welcome back into the house of mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Michael Hawley, must be an awful day because you're in co-hosting today.
That is correct. Make it a great day, Al.
Well, listen, so we've got a writer with us today, and he's got a book out. It's called A Cat in the Act. That's Brian Austinall. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Nice speaking with you, Brian.
Good to speak to you, too.
Brian, why would you become a writer? Like, what is it that brought you into this world to decide this is your first book? So, you know, you've had a bit of a life already, and you jump into writing a book. Why?
Yeah, it was really during COVID. It became a COVID project, and I just thought, I really didn't have a lot of experience with writing. I was in show business for a long time. And so I was in a creative field, but writing wasn't something I really did. So I had written a couple of short stories, but no real background in writing. And I just decided that during COVID that I was going to try to write a novel. And I just did it. You know, the challenge of being a new writer and, you know, looking at trying to find a publisher and going through different rewrites. I think it was three rewrites till I finally got it the way I wanted it. And it was a real creative process, which is, you know, as a creative artist, that's what it's really about. And that process is what made it really fun and interesting and kind of surprising. I mean, I was really quite surprised that I could write. You know, that I'd show it to people, send a chapter here or there, and they liked it. And that was like, really? Okay, I'll keep going. So that's what happened.
Well, you were paying them, of course.
That's... Oh, yeah.
No, but I guess, you know, in a way, you probably, well, I'm guessing this, but you probably used a lot of your creativity from being in the stage and acting and singing and doing different things.
Exactly.
You probably put a lot of that into your writing, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. It's a very cathartic experience, too, because I was in New York from 1981 to 1991. And those were the years when the AIDS epidemic took hold. And as a young performer, around the mid-80s, it really started to affect me and all the people I was performing with. And I started seeing all my close friends, or not all, but quite a few, die. I mean, here we are, young, vital, confident, beautiful, talented people, and all of a sudden, people are getting sick and dying. And it was absolutely terrifying to be in New York during that time. So this is a kind of a cathartic look back at that time. But at the same time, I wanted this book to be entertaining and fun to read. So I interspersed a fantasy character. So there's a real balance of what, you know, the community was dealing with was the AIDS epidemic. But at the same time, the main character has the ghost of his dead cat. Her name is Hobo, and she is, you know, trying to get him back on track. He lost his lover to AIDS, and he's kind of, it's been like a year and a half where he can barely get out of the house. So she comes along, she helps him to kind of refine and get his quote unquote act back together again, restart his career in show business, and also begin to maybe look for, you know, love again and trust in love. And so she's sort of the character that keeps it light and going. And, but all the experiences and all the people that show up in the book are kind of combinations of people that I remember and things that happen to certain people or to me. So it's absolutely drawn on all my years in New York.
So the cat could speak?
The cat speaks. She appears very quickly. So I'm not really giving that away. She appears right. Basically, the opening of the chapter one is he has to put his favorite cat down after, you know, losing his lover a year and a half ago. His name is Matthew. He has to put his cat down, and that's just the, you know, the last straw. So, you know, he comes back home with his empty cat carrying case, and on the way back, all of a sudden the ghost of Hobo appears, and he's just doesn't know if it's really her or it's, and in fact, throughout the book, I let the reader decide whether Hobo is a real ghost or if she's just, you know, his altered imagination. You know, I leave that for the reader to kind of figure out. But she's a sassy cat and she gives him lots of grief. And it, interestingly enough, I drew on the cat from an experience that my husband and I took in a feral cat, and we named her Hobo because she was a little tramp. And she was wild and you couldn't get anywhere near her. But over, I would say, a year and a half to 2 year period, with all the patience we could come up with, we slowly trained her and got her to trust us and to trust the love we were giving her. So part of the message of the book is really how to trust in love, how to trust in receiving love and giving love. And she showed us that in a really interesting way in real life. And then I brought that into the character as well. Kind of fun, sassy way. So it's really a story of the main character trying to find himself and restart his career. So the whole show business thing and auditioning and going through all of that and going to different theaters and all of that experience was what I remember. And then the other part of it is this, you know, romantic interest that comes into it and how that worked as well. So there are kind of two things going on.
Now, Matthew, your main character, how do you get into that kind of character? How do you write a character like that? And what kind of relationship did you end up having with this character? Do you see him, hear him, feel him? Is he like a friend? Or how do you describe that experience?
Yeah, I absolutely saw him exactly how he looked. And, you know, that's kind of described in the book. And could have actually even hear his voice. And the funny thing is, the people who have read the book, they're like, they just talk about it like, that's me. And I'm like, no, that's not me. This is not a memoir. I did, you know, this is a character that the thoughts that he has and things that he kind of comes up with about his experience of being in show business and, you know, sort of the difficulty of that are definitely thoughts that I had. So I kind of channeled into Matthew some of my feelings about show business and how the ups and the downs of it. But he's actually a combination of maybe three different people, and his attitude and things that he's attracted to and things that he does is actually from stories of people that I knew at that time. So it's very clear his character, though, and his relationship with the cat is really quite fun, and you know, they're very close in a really interesting way. They kind of get at each other. So
does the cat get jealous when he's an interest?
Oh no, the cat's just too way above all that. I mean, you know, she appears and disappears and gives him lessons and then just leaves and then tries, and then he screws up and then she tries to help him again, and you know, he kind of figures it out. He's looking for love in all the wrong places. And and, you know, these are places that I knew about and went to, or I had friends who went to, and, you know, like Fire Island and, you know, those sorts of places, or different clubs. And, you know, I actually interviewed people about a certain club that was very popular in New York called The Saint. And it was a real intense kind of club experience. And I have the character at some point go there, and I needed a lot of information about it because I had never been there, but I got the info from somebody else who kind of was a club kid. So I incorporate that into it. The other thing I incorporate into it is with the AIDS crisis, what happened in this time period that this takes place, which is like 1987, you know, previous to that, they started using AZT, but people were, you know, not living. They were dying even with the AZT, and the government wasn't really supporting. I don't know if you remember those times, but it was a really tough time. Nobody was wanting to hear about it or support AIDS and research, and at this juncture, the gay community started to really fight back, and they created something called ACT UP, and I don't know if you are familiar with that or remember it, but that was something where they started to protest, and I incorporate that into the book too. So this is sort of a pivotal moment in where the gay community is not just going to be victims from this illness, they're going to actually stand up and fight back and, you know, get strong and demand the money and resources they need. So I injected this whole situation with these fictional characters. So the fictional character Matthew goes to an ACT UP meeting, and that ACT UP meeting goes to the ACT UP first protest that happened downtown in Wall Street. And I incorporated that day, that time, that place, and even some of the chanting and even some of the things, who was arrested. And so I took like history and put it into this, you know, fictional book.
Question on that is, Magic Johnson, I think that's probably what caused other people to, let's say, shake up, right?
Understand, yeah.
Was that around that same time, or was that a few years later?
It was a few years later. You know who really hit home in 1985 was Rock Hudson. Do you remember that?
Oh, that's right.
Hudson. And Doris Day was hanging by his side, but he was looking really gaunt and awful. And all of a sudden, somebody who was really famous got AIDS. And it was just a shock to everybody. And all of a sudden, AIDS became very well known. But it was a really, really difficult time because people were so afraid of it. And, you know, the main character gets into some of that, too, with his family's afraid to have him around and things like that. Or people don't want to go have brunch at your house because they don't want to be in the same room with somebody who might have AIDS. So that aspect is put into it, too.
Yeah, both Mike and I are very old, so we were around.
That's right.
We were all there. But, you know.
Well, as a matter of fact, I went to Michigan State University, and my freshman year was going to be the senior year of Magic Johnson. So, but of course, he went to the pros his junior year, so I missed the guy. So that right there is probably why I remember that more than Rock Hudson, but yeah. Now I remember. Rock Hudson, yeah.
Well, I think the big difference, too, is to see Rock Hudson when it came out, and then he had AIDS and all this stuff. The public kind of went on, well, you know, he's fooling around with men and all this stuff. So it was kind of, it was still sort of isolated to the gay community. Whereas where when you get into Magic Johnson, all of a sudden, oh, he's a straight man. How did he get it? Yeah,
right.
That was kind of a shock to conservatives that thought, well, it's a gay disease.
Yeah. You know, it's fine if all the gay people die of it, but all of a sudden the straight people are getting it and Ryan White.
Yeah, the concern of conservatives all of a sudden changed the Reaganomic sort of idea, you know.
Yeah. Right.
He wouldn't even say the word, right?
It's a gay disease.
It's not his concern. So
right. Right.
That was so frustrating for the gay community. And this is why ACT UP started.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked ACT UP. You know, they used to go into churches, Catholic churches, and throw condoms in the.
Yeah, and it really made a difference. And people started to actually pay attention, and we started getting, you know, some drugs. And
right.
Of course, it didn't, you know, really change until I think it was 1996. So after my time in New York, that's when they got the protease inhibitor, which was the first actual thing that you could, you know, it became not a death sentence anymore. All of a sudden, you could take this combination of drugs and you weren't going to die. So,
well, that's kind of what you need to do. You know, they need to ACT UP. And we sort of need that now. I think the country needs really strong left activists that do things like, you know, but seems to be a different time. So
yeah, I think the left activists, they don't agree with each other, so they're arguing, and that screws things up because the right's just crushing them.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible, terrible mess right now.
Well, that's actually, it's funny that with ACT UP, you know, it's the first time I actually have thought that, I thought of, you know, Matthew, you know, getting his act together, but I never thought about actually how the word ACT is used also with ACT UP. There's a character in the book. His name is Gabriel, and he's like a very flamboyant kind of Creole queen. And he's the one who gets Matthew to come to the ACT UP meeting. So he's another character that's really quite funny and sort of outrageous. And again, a combination of like three different guys that I knew in New York, and how difficult it was to be black and be gay in New York. It was, you were struggling with not only being gay, but the discrimination of being black, and the gay community was not as accepting of black men. That, you know, it was all the good looking straight white guys or gay white guys. So this character is really kind of an interesting character who comes in. He's a friend of Matthew's, and he's sort of outraged.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Just...
Do you find it difficult writing a character of a different culture like that, like a black character?
You know, I really didn't. It was, I really had fun writing his character. And, you know, it absolutely was not, you know, like Matthew, there's definitely a part of him. And then the love interest, his name is Christopher. There are parts of me and Christopher and parts of me and Matthew, but there really isn't a part of me in Gabriel. But because I knew and was really close to these people, I knew how to write that dialogue. And I really kind of understood what that was about. It was, you know, really pretty, I don't know, it just came to me pretty easily. There's a female character, too, that I write about, that she's a straight woman who's a chorus dancer, gorgeous chorus dancer. And it wasn't difficult for me to, you know, write her either or write her dialogue. So it's interesting how that kind of, the imagination just takes over, and it's based on really, you know, experiences of people and what I took from those people And I could hear, somebody that I knew saying those lines the way, you know, this Gabriel character says them.
Did you take the advice of some of the friends you said that had read some of your chapters?
When I was trying to get it published, I was getting a criticism that I needed to work on something, like work on the dialogue a little bit more and, you know, that kind of thing. So I had to clean that up. But specifically the characters, they were all working really well. There was, you know, I think that was very important to me, that people kind of understand those characters and have some kind of connection to them and maybe a little empathy for them. So that just sort of, you know, and I think that's partly being an actor, and that dialogue and that feeling of those personalities came through because I was sort of acting it as I was writing it. You know what I'm saying? I've done different characters where those people are not me. You know, I played Che in Evita. I wasn't a revolutionary. But you find things about yourself, and you find ways into, you know, that sort of truth, and you can play with that. And I think that's kind of what I did with these characters.
Did you have a subtext or something in mind underneath the story? Is there something that you wanted people to pick up from the story itself, besides entertainment, let's say?
Just the lessons of universal love and how that can work if you let yourself be open to that. And just if you let yourself, you know, be confident enough to understand that you really can do what you want to do. So it was a real journey of discovery for Matthew to, you know, stand his ground and to go and, you know, seek out what he actually was really born to do. And the process of doing that was, you know, its own reward. So it was, you know, it's fun in that way and uplifting. I don't think there was anything really deeper into the subtext than that.
How about words, as in, you know, how they, through the decades, there's the appropriate things to say, ways to say. Did you take that into account, or did you try to write it like you were in the 80s and everything about the 80s? The jokes that are appropriate or now inappropriate, all of that.
I really tried to visualize the 80s while I was writing it. I can't say that I, thought, oh, that doesn't sound very 80s. I probably should rewrite it a different way. But it really felt like as I wrote it, I was living it. It's interesting how even when you're like working on the chapter and you've written the chapter already and you go back and redo it and, you know, work on it. Every time I did it, I felt like the characters were real and I was hearing them talk and, you know, and putting words in their mouth. And it was a very interesting process, but it felt like the 80s because that was the time. I was really only there in the 80s from 81 to 91. So my whole experience of New York is based on that.
Ah, okay. That's the cathartic part.
Yeah, very much so. Very, very much so. You know, things that happened during that time and what theater was like then, and it's completely different now. You know, and how you get in shows, and who, I wouldn't even know. Now it's probably all done by computer.
You didn't grab your phone and talk on it, or like a cell phone.
Yeah, there was no cell phones. You got this paper called Backstage, and you opened that paper and you saw the audition, an open call for, you know, singers who dance and dancers who sing, and, you know, for this show or that show. And you show up at the audition, and if you're Equity, you get your Equity card, which I did pretty quickly. And, you know, you're there with, you know, 200 guys. And so that experience of auditioning actually comes into the book as well. So he's obviously auditioning for a show. So the whole audition, you know, experience, from that to the callback to waiting and not knowing, and it's all part of the book, because I wanted that experience to be in there.
So was there anything you learned about doing this book? Like when you were doing the book, was there anything that you didn't know about at the time that you learned? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so.
Well, I didn't know as much about ACT UP because I wasn't involved in it when it was going on. I was too caught up in just kind of trying to like be in my career and keep working, because that's what you do when you're in show business. You work and you try to stay in shows. And I toured a lot. So I didn't looking up ACT UP and looking up that first protest and how it started and, you know, researching ACT UP specifically, that was something I did learn. And that was, you know, really quite interesting. Or actually, I also, there, you know, because it's a New York story, the character goes to all these different places in New York and he describes buildings in New York. Like he worked out at the YMCA, which is where I worked out, on 64th and Central Park West. And the character is interested in architecture. So architecture of old buildings and, you know, the Flatiron Building comes into it. And so I researched these buildings and learned a little bit more about them, or the theater that he goes to audition in as well, and the Belasco Theater. And then I'm not going to give you everything. So there are other things about theater luminaries that I did a lot of research on to come up with a character, and that's the reader will have to, if they buy the book, they'll find a theatrical luminary that I researched a lot, and he comes into the story as well. It's fun to learn more about those sorts of things.
So what do you think? First book written, what do you think of the publishing world? How was writing the first book for you?
It's so hard to know how different it would have been, you know, from anybody else that's, you know, written numerous books. I didn't, you know, as I wrote it or when I finished the first one, I thought, well, I don't want to self-publish. I don't want to deal with that. And, you know, I'm not going to send the book out to, you know, 100 people because I don't really want to, you know, push myself. I'm not that kind of pushy personality. So I'll send it to a few people and got a decent response, but that, you know, needed more. And so reworked it some more. I hired a freelance editor to edit it. I knew a publisher who didn't do this kind of, you know, genre books, but he did literary books. Anyway, he suggested a freelance editor, and he said, you know, if you really want to get this book published, send it to this guy and, you know, pay their fee. And he really helped me clean it up. And he also suggested Ian and Suki and Rattling Good Yarns. After he's finished it, he said, you know, this publishing company, you know, might be interested in this book. So that's what I did. So then I sent it to them, and then they asked for a little bit more rewrites, and then they accepted the book. So it was a pretty simple process. And then, you know, working with Ian, he was such a great editor. So that final edit of the book with him, I just can't tell you how wonderful that experience was. I think because I am, you know, new to it, that I just was grateful. I'm so grateful for any kind of, you know, feedback and how to make it, you know, clean it up and make it, you know, really, really polished and ready to be a real book. So the whole experience was, you know, very positive for me.
You plan on doing another book now? What's kind of going on for you now?
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've written a few more short stories, and I do have one book or one, you know, a series of chapters. I've got three or four chapters that I've started. I haven't really, it's funny, I haven't really committed to anything, you know, really new, but I'm still sort of exploring. And, you know, people are saying, oh, write the sequel to this book. And I'm like, no, I think this book is really what I want it to be. And I'm, you know, looking at other things. But I do think that I sort of have the bug, and I will keep writing.
Right. So who are your inspirations in the writing world, or do you have any?
Gosh, that's a really good question. You know who is actually, and he doesn't write anything like I wrote, Christopher Isherwood. He's an incredibly wonderful writer, a literary writer from really the last, you know, he came about in the 30s. He actually wrote the Cabaret. It was originally called I Am a Camera, and he wrote that. And so that was a big claim to fame for him. And he wrote a bunch of other really interesting books, and they also had a spiritual side to them. And he followed a Swami, an Indian Swami, and I was fascinated by that because the other thing that I got involved in was yoga. And so I was fascinated by that aspect of Christopher Isherwood. And actually, yoga comes into the book as well. So one of the characters is into yoga. So I bring yoga into the book.
Of course.
Of course. After I left show business, I became a personal trainer and a yoga instructor. So I led retreats and did a lot of training. And it was a really good career. I'm retired now. But yoga definitely came into it, and yoga comes into the book as well. But Christopher Isherwood was a fascinating reader. I've read all his books. And I would say he's a mentor of mine.
What about Mike?
Yeah, that's right. I write about serial killers.
I don't read a lot of serial killer stuff. I like romance novels, and which is, kind of fun and fun things. Right now I'm reading The Dalai Lama's Cat. I read other cat books.
Oh, okay.
My husband is cat crazy. We have two cats, and we like our cats. So right now I'm reading, it's a really fun book called The Dalai Lama's Cat. And again, I got into yoga, and I got into Buddhism as well, and so it fits for me. And some of that philosophy comes into this book, because the Matthew, the character Hobo, brings in these philosophies, and his romantic interest is somebody who is into yoga and things like that. So all of that gets put in the book too. I just, it's grist for the mill. I just shoveled it all in.
Nice.
I think it all kind of comes together in a good way. And I must say, the book, when you kind of complete a book, it does teach you something. All the sort of the lessons about that are in the book, somehow they came through me, and I put them on the book, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, that actually means something to me. So it's an interesting process to bring that through your body. It's almost like channeling all this stuff, and then the outcome, you look at it, and it actually means something to me personally.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about where people can find you. Do you have like a website? Do you have social media that you like readers to maybe interact with you? Give out all your details.
I'm on Facebook, and my name is Brian Arsenault. And I don't have a author web page, maybe because I'm as a new author. So I'm happy to be friends with anybody on Facebook and talk about the book. But that's really the only kind of platform I'm on at this point. I'm going to get started and maybe get onto Instagram as well. But I'm not a real techie person, so.
Oh, come on. Get on TikTok and start dancing.
Yeah, I got that.
Right? You got all that experience.
Yeah, hopefully I'll get on Instagram. It's been fun doing Facebook and, putting up the book and, things like that. And I've gotten a really nice response from a lot of different people. So that's been fun.
Do you have a website then, or?
No, I don't have a website. I'm on Amazon as an author.
Well, we'll put that up, or we'll put the publisher's website up, so people can find you. Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about your new book. And, of course, the book is called A Cat in the Act. And the writer's our guest, Brian Arsenault. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to do this. I really appreciate you guys.
Nice speaking with you, Brian.
Nice speaking with you, too.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.